Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast, starring your host, Christine Rolo Capriolo. Today's special guest has a ton of patience. It's Dave, waiting for Good Day.
Hello, my wonderful listeners. I'm very excited today, as I always am, but this is super duper exciting. I have someone who's been in the comedy sports family for years. I can't wait to hear his story. Hey, everyone, let's welcome Dave Gaudette. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for doing this today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I listened to a couple of episodes and heard my name on one of them, I think maybe with Cortese or Dick, and I was like, how do I get a piece of that? And then when you reached out to me, I was like, I'm in, definitely.
You're in. You're one of us. Welcome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you could take some time today. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to hear your story. I know you've been involved with comedy sports for quite a long time, but let's start with, where were you born and raised?
I grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut. And then my dad was a Wall Street guy. So he was, we had a house or an apartment in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And so he would commute. And then through high school and college, I would go to the city, as we would call it, back and forth. And then when I went off to college at Denison University, I knew I wanted to do something in the comedy world, and I knew that I couldn't afford to live in the city. Right. So I found another city, and that became Chicago.
Okay. Well, hold on. I want to back up a second. This is totally unrelated to comedy sports, but I love Tony Maselli, Tony Danza from Who's the Boss? And
yes.
He was...
Well, you know, I could have predicted where this was going. That was not it.
Yes, he moved in with Angela Bauer in Connecticut, was from Brooklyn, and she would drive into the city or take a train into the city for her work. She worked in Manhattan. How long is that commute from Connecticut to Manhattan?
It can be a couple of hours, but it's fairly quick unless you hit traffic. But my dad would get up at like 5 in the morning, jump on a train, and he could be, on the Board of Exchange and by 8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. I've always wondered that. Did you know Tony Maselli when you were in Connecticut? Was he there yet?
Only in passing on the Sawmill Parkway. I'd be like, hey. Never. Didn't even recognize me. It was awkward because we were both in the same track of celebrity stardom.
Right. I love him. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Back to this.
It must have been who he married. It's probably just he married into it, clearly.
So Denison University, where's that?
In a little town called Granville, Ohio.
Okay.
And just outside of Columbus there, which is where I found improv, actually.
Yeah, tell me about that. How did you find improv, or was it right away comedy sports, or were you studying improv first?
Well, it's actually a pretty cool story. So Steve Carell actually started my improv troupe in college.
Like you were with him?
He graduated the year that I arrived,
okay.
And he came back to do an alumni show.
Cool.
And he said, they're paying us money in Chicago to do improv. You have to do it. And so, I went through my 4 years, and the group was called Burpee CD's Theatrical Company. It's the longest running college improv troupe in the world. It's been around for over 40 years now.
Wow.
We just celebrated our 40th anniversary a few years back, right before the pandemic. We all went back, about 90 of us.
Oh.
Transcended on the school to perform, and he actually, Steve was there as well, and it was a really great time, but it was a really nice opportunity to sort of understand the short form games and things like that. That's where I played for 4 years. So when I got out of college, I was ready for comedy sports.
And then how did you hear about comedy sports after doing that in college?
So a few of the people that had been in Burpee CDs actually were in comedy sports already. And when I came to town, I auditioned the week I came to town, and the next week I was on stage.
In Chicago, you're saying?
Yeah, in Chicago, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow, and had you heard of comedy sports before that?
Well, only through the alumni going, coming back and saying, we're in a thing called comedy sports.
Yeah.
It's basically a competitive Burpee CDs. It's amazing. And Burpee CDs, we stood up there with a horn and said, give us a suggestion, and then we'd play one of the short form games.
Okay.
And then... So when those folks ahead of me went to Chicago, I just sort of followed them there. And the audition, I think in that audition, there were like 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
three of us made it. One guy quit halfway through the first show we had. Oh. And
in the middle of the show?
In the middle of the show, he's just like, I have to go.
What?
And I was like, what do you mean you have to go? We had a whole other half of the show. He's like, I can't do this. And he left.
Oh, like he was nervous he can't do this? Or
yeah, nervous, had a total breakdown, just said, tell them thank you, and walked out. I was like, well, I'm new. Like,
that's awkward. What am
I
supposed to?
I can't play your part. All right, I'm in.
All right, okay. Go with it. Yes, and.
But I mean, now we're, you know, we're seeing 300 people auditioning. We just held auditions the other day, and we had 300 people audition for our organization. And it's really exciting, especially during a pandemic.
Yeah.
To see that. But I tell that story a lot of, you know, in the early days, because there wasn't tons of improv out there. There was, you know, a handful of groups, and now everybody's got a group. And the fact that we're still pulling in 300 people to audition every time we do it is pretty exciting.
That's wonderful. So what year did you start in Chicago?
I started in 88.
Nice.
1988, not
1888. Okay, 1988 in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then you've been there ever since?
I am, yeah. So somebody else ran it ahead of me. So there's a guy named David Paul Knutton who ran it ahead of me, and he was an incredible performer and did a wonderful job of getting us started here. And we had a good core group of folks. So we all, at that point in time, you really didn't perform with somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were in Comedy Sports, you were in Comedy Sports, and you didn't perform at IO, and you didn't perform at, The Annoyance didn't even exist at that point in time. And they, you know, you took Second City classes maybe, but you were like, die hard, I'm only performing this group. And when I kind of came to Chicago, I wanted to perform everywhere. So I performed, you know, every night, practiced every night that I wasn't performing, and, you know, would sometimes perform in two or three theaters at a time in the, you know, in one evening.
Right. Now, so what is it about Comedy Sports that drew you in? What did you love about it?
So I was a hockey player in college. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty heavy competitive streak, as you'll know if you've ever played against me in Comedy Sports. I hate losing.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah, okay. Hate it. Like when Dick says, like, you know, play to win, but don't care if you lose, that second part I'm not really good at.
That's not you. You're not good at that.
No. And I would tell you that I think Chicago for a long time was driven by that exact same thing. Like, people love to watch us perform, and we made we had some great tournaments and things like that, but we probably took it a little too serious in the beginning. And I have to take credit for that. I'm taking credit for it.
That's you. That's all you.
That's right. Because blame would be like losing credit. I won.
Right. Because you guys are playing bunny all night long until you get it right, huh?
That's right. Yeah.
No, bunny, damn it.
Yeah, you're not doing it. It's 2 ears. What is that? That's not an ear. That's still your hand.
Right. So you liked the competitive nature of the format of the show.
I did. And to this day, I think it's the reason why we've been around for as long as we have. You know, being able to play up the competitive spirit and the competition of it is something that makes it uniquely Comedy Sports. I mean, the Whose Line Is It Anyway pretends to have the competition, and I think that helps them as well.
Right.
Obviously, the celebrities and stardom helps that even more. But for us, I mean, there's been a lot of people that have tried to mimic us through the years, and they don't have that competitive element in it. And the moment that you pull that out of this, we're just people doing, you know, short form improv. And there's a dime a dozen of those out there.
Well, right. And in Chicago, right? I mean, you have a lot of groups in Chicago. So this is what makes you stand out. There's this different format than everyone else.
Yeah, I think there's that. The other thing that I think is that we've really leaned on in Chicago is that the accessibility of Comedy Sports. So the audience that may have never even seen theater before, or say, like, I don't really like theater, right? They can come see a Comedy Sports show, and because of the competitive nature in this town is, you know, filled with sports teams, they're able to get behind the competitive piece of it. And that's the thing that drives them and gives them access to what I think is, you know, not just comedy and not just improv, but I think theater in general, a lot of times we find that is the first thing that they've experienced.
Oh, okay. So you probably have a lot of returning audience members then.
We do. It's awkward now when people return and they come up to me and they've got kids and their kids are like 8 and they're like, man, I'm so glad to see you still doing this. It's amazing. I came when I was in high school and you were on the stage then. It's really great to see you still doing it.
Good job.
Who owns this? I'm like, what do you mean?
So, well, tell me about all your different roles in the Chicago troupe and just Comedy Sports in general since 1988. What are all the different titles you've taken on?
Yeah, so I started just as a player in the beginning, and David Paul was running it, and then he decided that he was going to go out to Denver and try to do a comedy sports out there with his sister and kind of leave the Chicago franchise. And at that point in time, when the Chicago franchise was available, myself and Liz Cloud and Jill Shealy all picked it up, and I was the artistic director, and they were the managers. And then Liz went on to do regular theater, and we stuck around, Jill and myself, to own comedy sports throughout the years. And I was artistic director for a long time. And then, you know, at a point, you finally sort of realize you have to give up the reins for the group to be able to grow and to understand a different perspective. And that was really refreshing to us. So we've had a lot of different artistic directors through the years. And now as we kind of go, I'm sort of board of, you know, the chairman of the board or the president, I guess, is probably the role. But, you know, I think the place that I love and always desired to be is just a player. I think that's probably the best part of all of it.
Yeah.
I never really started this to run it, but also realized if I was going to be able to have a place to perform in a format that I love, that somebody had to run it. So that was me.
Is this your full-time gig?
It's not anymore. We've got an incredible staff of people that run comedy sports full-time now. So I really am sort of a chairman of the board, president, and figurehead like that. Even during the pandemic, I actually didn't perform while we were still performing virtual shows. Virtual. And actually, we performed live shows with plexi masks and all that kind of stuff. And
okay.
And now we've just we've moved our theater for the 15th time.
The 15th time.
15 times we've opened a new theater. Yeah.
And where are you now? Crazy. Where are you now?
Well, we're in a place called the Second City. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before.
Little bit here and there.
Yeah. So we just announced this week that we're taking one of the theaters in the Second City. So nice to see the improv world come together. And we have a lot of people that have been in comedy sports and Second City throughout the years. And when they reached out to us and said, would we be interested? The timing was just right for us to be able to do it. And so they have a lot of theaters over there that, you know, don't get used as much. And we said we'd jump at the opportunity. And so we worked everything out. And now that's our home there. We have one of their theaters over there.
And how many people can fit in there?
85.
Okay.
So it's also the smallest theater that we've had. So the largest theater that we had was on Halsted, and that was about 210, 220.
Okay.
And then the next one that we were in for the longest, which is the one that we just left, was about 150, and now we go to 85.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, within comedy sports, you've traveled to lots of different cities and played, right?
I've played a lot of different cities, but I've also, you know, taken comedy sports itself all around the world. So it's been kind of exciting to do that as well.
Well, where have you been? Tell me about where you've performed.
Around the world, the farthest away is we did an Intel tour, a 15-city tour, or I'm sorry, 11-city tour in 21 days. We wrapped all the way around the world.
What?
Yeah, it was really cool. We literally just packed the bags and the keyboard and away we went, and we did comedy sports at these different Intel sites around the world. Now, everything was we do everything in English. So for Intel, English has to be your second language to be able to work in the manufacturing plants even.
Okay.
And so we're going around doing a celebration tour with their executives. So from Ireland to Germany to Malaysia to Japan.
Oh my gosh.
It was really cool, you know, to perform in Malaysia and the beaches of Malaysia in what were wedding tents on the beach for 2,500 people, and the smog from rainforests. If the wind is going to change, the show will be canceled.
Oh,
and you walk out and you're like, I need the name of someone who wants to share a day in their life. And you know, you couldn't understand anything they were saying.
Oh, no,
this is going to be really hard.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, how was it? How was it received when you traveled all over? How did the audiences receive the show?
You know, in the predominantly English-speaking places, you know, I think it worked. You play different games.
Right.
Right? So in those ones, you're okay. You know, although I would recommend anybody ever going over to the UK maybe not to try doing Shakespeare. It's kind of an insult.
I think that's when you should do Shakespeare. That's when you go over.
Yeah. They celebrate that guy over there. Who knew?
No, they weren't a fan. Okay.
Yeah, a little thorough, slightly offended. And we're like, okay, well, when we go to Ireland, we'll do it.
Yeah, scrap that. All right.
But, you know, I think for some of the other places like the Malaysias and Japan, what we did is the, you know, the Jerry Lewis rule of, you know, funny faces make people laugh. Yeah. And so five things crushes over there because okay. they get it, they can read it, and you're able to do something. But you try to do things that are a little bit more active over there as much as learning the cultures. Like there's little things that you're not supposed to do. Like you're not supposed to give the okay sign in Germany. That means like kiss my ass. Well, we've learned something here today.
Oh, no.
Yeah. In Malaysia, you're not supposed to point at somebody. That's not what you're supposed to do. So it was like we had a guy that was traveling with us, Keith Whipple at the time, who was also in the troop. And, you know, he just did a whole sort of cultural dive so that we didn't make those mistakes. But it was an interesting learning.
Well, yeah,
just a learning
curve
all the way along the way.
Well, yeah, and sometimes just, you know, our slang doesn't cross over, you know, or just words or phrases or, like you said, physical things, like the okay sign, you know, those things don't translate or it's just completely missed. They don't understand what you're doing.
And I would, yeah, I think the biggest thing that's missed in the sort of lost in translation is sarcasm.
Yes.
They know the language, but they don't know the sarcasm. So you got to slow it way down and speak like this and make sure that they understand every word that you are saying.
Yeah. Or like I said, slang doesn't.
Slang's not in, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, and that's hard because I think just we're so used to speaking our language, we don't realize what doesn't translate or what words we're using that they just wouldn't know. So that's got to be a really difficult thing to do in so many cities in 11 days.
21 days, 11 cities.
Oh, 21 days, 11 cities.
So big physical comedy worked really, really well, and we learned quickly and adjusted it. What we didn't really learn, we had to learn ahead of time, was that we had to do an opening dance for Intel. It was the time when they had those, you remember when they used to have the boogie dancing kind of guys that were, it was like a commercial that they had. And they're in these Mylar suits. Well, we got the Mylar suits and they wanted us to tour with dancers. And then their budget got cut. And they're like, can you guys do the dance? We're like, did we do the dance? We don't go on the gig. They're like, sort of. We're like, we can dance.
We can dance. We can do it.
So we'd come out in these Mylar suits and do a big dance number. And then they would show a video of an executive. And then we'd come out as Comedy Sports and play the games.
Oh, my gosh. Now, how did you get this? How did Intel find out about Comedy Sports to get you to do this all over the world?
Well, I have two companies. So I have Comedy Sports Chicago, but then I have another company called On Cue. And basically, it's a creative company that works within the world of corporate meetings and events. And we basically create unique ways to deliver content so that we're not looking at podium parades of executives justifying their existence. Instead, we're finding new ways to be able to tell the story and deliver the messages. And so from there, you know, it's always sort of been a kind of conglomerate of a creative company that helps increase production partners' creative bandwidth. And so that's how we got connected to it. A production partner said, we'll call Dave. He'll figure it out. And that's what we did.
Wow, that's incredible.
That was cool.
That's amazing. What was your favorite place to do a show on that trip?
Malaysia was the favorite place. I mean, I loved Ireland because they just, I mean, I thought I can really party and drink, but I mean, these people are at a corporate event. They were hanging from the chandeliers and they like, it was like feeding icing to kids for them when they said, someone's going to come and do comedy here. Oh, okay. Right. And we just, it was a ball. We were rock stars there. But Malaysia was really cool just because of the culture differences. Yeah. And everybody was so kind and nice. And it was really cool.
Wow. Yeah. What an incredible experience you have. Well, then coming back to Chicago, and I know you've traveled to comedy sports cities in the States. What does Chicago do with the format or the show that's different than other comedy sports is? Or what do you do really well in Chicago that's, you know, really strong compared to other cities?
You know, I think we have a little bit of an advantage, and we're seeing that change a little bit now that everybody's getting, you know, bigger and broader improvisers in these other cities. But everybody comes to Chicago to go to the second city or to be an improviser. And so we get this massive, great pool of talent. And so that for us alone just sort of helps the caliber of talent that we're able to put on our stage, I think. But the differentiator for us, and it has always been, was musical games.
Yes.
We have some incredible musical directors. Ryan Mira is our current one. And they're just, you know, throughout the years, we have these people that supported musical improv and our singers. And so for a long time, that's what we were known to do. We would basically step up and you could play whatever game you wanted. We were eventually going to play musical comedy and you were going to lose, but go ahead and give us your best shot with your arms expert with accents.
Competitive much? I think I'm getting that from you again.
Oh yeah, exactly. Don't fight about it, Christy. Let's go.
No, you're good. You're good.
Most of it is just poking the bear. Like, I love just poking the bear. Like, one time we went up to Milwaukee, to your hometown,
right,
and we didn't tell anybody that we were coming. We just told Dick, and we said, hey, we're going to come up. And you had your team up there, and they were doing their Friday night show. Right. And we just walked in with our Comedy Sports shirts on, and we're like, well, well, well.
Oh, no.
Look who it is. And no one told the guys on stage. They were like, what's happening? And only one person kind of knew who I was.
Right.
And they're like, that is Chicago. And they're like, you guys want to play us? And we just basically asked the audience, you want to see Milwaukee play Chicago?
No way.
And by the end of it, all the old school guys had been called. Everybody had come down to watch. It was like a really just cool piece that we did, just sort of grab some people. We said, let's just go to Milwaukee. We'll call Dick and we'll just show up and play.
That's
and
one awesome.
Of my favorite moments. It was great because you had old school there in the house. And then you had a lot of the newer folks that were actually on stage,
right,
you know, seeing what was going to happen. And sometimes it's what happens between the games. It's just as much fun as in the games. And that was certainly the case there.
So you came in singing like the Jets on West Side Story, huh? You were snapping and.
Oh, exactly. And you guys had like just changed from Brett Favre. And so, you know, all I was doing was Brett Favre jokes, just poking the bear all the time. It's like, who's your quarterback next year, right? That didn't turn out too well for us in Chicago, but it was fun then.
That sounds awesome. You should do that again. Just a surprise visit and a challenge. I love it.
Yeah, it was great. We loved it. I think it was right before tournament is why we did it.
Yeah, could be.
So we did it to promote tournament, and it worked out great. We've always had a great love with Milwaukee and, you know, some of my best friends in comedy sports are all from there because they basically taught me how to play comedy sports. You know, I used to, when Comedy Sports Chicago got to a point of the guy running it before me, it was starting to fade. And so myself and Brian Bragg would jump in the train on Friday after work because we both worked together, and we'd go up and play in Milwaukee.
Okay.
And then Dick and Jennifer would put us up somewhere on a couch, and then the next day we'd either play on Saturday or we'd go home.
Oh, nice.
So we learned to play with, you know, Angelo and Brian Green, Peter Alberts, Joe Cortez. I mean, those knuckleheads were all really good friends of mine.
That's
and still,
great. You know, they are knuckleheads, aren't they?
I wouldn't replace them for anybody.
No, I love them.
Honestly, they taught us how to play comedy sports, and it was a really amazing time because everything was, you know, improv was it was like a magic trick still.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. Well, you know, and I love that you're saying you studied some in college, some improv, and then you were doing comedy sports and you're learning in Milwaukee. But really, like, as you said, Chicago, and now I'm remembering when I met you, was at a tournament in Milwaukee when you guys were blowing everybody away with your musical games. And Milwaukee hasn't had a keyboardist in decades, and there are very rarely musical games played. And watching you and your team was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I think we were, you know, gifted the pool of talent in this city by, you know, simply people wanting to come. And there's, you know, there's probably 10, well, now after the pandemic, 5.
Right.
And I don't know what the number is now, but, you know, there was so many, everybody that graduated from someplace then decided, well, I'm going to go start my own improv theater. And right before the pandemic, I mean, we opened our last theater. There was one theater within, you know, maybe a mile from us. Mm-hmm. And within 5 years, there were at least 6 or 7 improv theaters around where our theater was.
Okay.
So there was a big boom of people had some capital and they decided that I can do what they're doing, and they opened their doors and away they competed.
Well, how do you approach musical games, or how do you teach it to your players when they're new there? I want to hear more about that.
You know, in our audition process, it used to be a necessity. We used to basically bring in our music director, and sometimes we still do, depending upon what we're looking for in an ensemble, because we do know that the musical games are something here in Chicago that I think still is that magic trick, right?
Yeah.
And so we audition people and try to see if they can sing, but it's not a game breaker, right? If you can't sing, then that's not the case. But we have some amazing singers. You know, I used to think I was good at singing, and now we have some just the professional talent, basically, yeah. of vocalists. And so when you have that, you learn from them.
Okay.
And so we do a lot of workshops where it's not taught by the artistic director, but it's taught by the musical director and some of those vocalists, some of those people mm-hmm. that are professionally trained, because there's a skill set to being able to do that. And then I think on the other side, and we'll always, you know, my good friend Phil Gronchi, who has to be the worst comedy sports singer on the planet. There's nobody worse. I'm sure he would tell you, yeah, you're probably right. His favorite game was opera.
Okay.
And yeah. And so that attitude, he'd call opera and we all go, oh no. And like the referee, we all know what we're in for. And the music director would be like, I can't wait to watch this train wreck. And so that, you know, that fearless to fail kind of mm-hmm. attitude is what permeates through our group. And I think for those folks that aren't singers, knowing that a musical game is going to play and they're going to play it to the hilt is kind of what's carried us to be able to make us grow. So we find a new perspective from somebody in the group who is, we know it has that musical talent. We make sure that we connect our musical director to also bring that in.
Okay.
And then we practice and put it into the show. But a lot of it happens from the moment that you're joining our organization, whether it's the rec league and then coming in through our minor league and then getting yourself into the actual ensemble itself. Mm-hmm. You're being taught all these sort of skill sets along the way. So it's not a, hey, everybody, we haven't done musical games in forever, so today we're all going to start. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly, I guess, how you start. But we kind of progress it all the way through their abilities to be able to get to the main stage.
Okay. Well, what's your favorite musical game?
I am so I have two games. One that I really love is just Blues Jam, which is basically get a suggestion and sing a blues song.
Nice.
We used to have Bill Haas was a alligator recording artist, which is a big blues recording studio here. And so he could play guitar and piano. And then we had John Chickendance, who could play guitar and piano. And so it was like being a blues star for the 3 to 4 minutes that you had it. So it was selfish. I would call it all the time if one of those guys were there. And anybody that we have in the blues progression is pretty simple to play, but
yeah.
I love that game. And then there's another game that was invented because we wanted to do different styles, as many styles as we could. And Musical Chairs does a nice job of that. But AM/FM is another game that we play in which we have a DJ and the DJ sort of throws it over with a series of suggestions that he's received from the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, a polka about Chicago hot dogs, a rap song about this. And it's only just a quick snippet of it happening. I think it's called something else now because it's now there is no AM radio, I guess. So it's something to do with your iPod's shuffle, I think.
Oh, shuffle, right. Yeah, sure. Was that kind of like the game Radio where it's like dark and you move the flashlight to the different people standing there?
No, it wasn't. No. It was basically one person's the DJ and then the other players are doing all the musical different genres that DJ just decides to throw out to you with a suggestion.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't like Radio. I love Radio, though. That's a great game also.
Well, what's your favorite non-musical game?
For me, it's, I would say Day in the Life.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I love Day in the Life because I think it's so much about the audience.
Yes.
And the thing that has to happen with every comedy sports show is the show has to be about the audience. Mm-hmm. That's why we ask them for suggestions. Right?
Right.
They're giving us a suggestion because there's something that made the impulse for them in their life to be able to share that. When we open that up to be able to do a day in their life mm-hmm. and see that happen, I think that's where something special happens. And we like to do that as a musical comedy, which is even greater. So we add that extra layer to it. And that for us is just, I think that's every one of my skill sets there. So I get excited about that.
Oh, I love that you do it as a musical comedy too. Listening to that, that just makes me want to go and have workshops and make everybody do musical games and get that going in Milwaukee because that is so incredible. You're right. It's like magic watching it happen.
Yeah, it's another gear, right?
Yeah.
So you know, we play comedy sports as if two of the greatest improvising teams came to the stage to play against each other, these games that have been around forever. but we're going to make it so hard that we're going to put rules on the games as well. We're that good. Like anything that we're doing to amp up the danger factor or amp up the competitive nature of it, you know, the one-upmanship is really where we can build that competitive streak for us. And so that helps us tell that story of competition. And a lot of times that is the lay-ons. I mean, sometimes it gets ridiculous. And it's like, this is just a bad idea. let's all admit we will never see this game again, right?
But you know, tried it, right? You committed, you tried it.
Yeah, sometimes it's for our own, we do it for ourselves.
Sure.
Yeah. I can't say that's never been me. That's me a lot of times.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's
let's do an arms expert blues jam. Sure, why not? Okay.
Oh my God, I love it. Well, okay, but wait, you said the players, you actually see if they can sing, and you mean like legitimately can sing or knows how to play the singing games? Like, you mean they have to be a good singer?
You don't have to be a good singer to be in the group. You have to be committed to try to be the best singer that you can be. And okay. We also ask, I think this is something that's important for everybody, is that we ask that you continually get better.
Yeah.
Right. And so if that's something that you don't have in your arsenal as a performer, well, we're going to give you the opportunity to get better at it.
Yeah.
But we also want you to, you know, put in the work to do it as well. And we've seen some really kind of cool transformations happen over the years when we see that. But you can't just ask somebody to get better and not provide them with that opportunity to do so.
Right. Do you have practices for your ensemble?
Yeah, we do rehearsals every, I guess they're called practices, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Practices in the field. Yeah, I'm not good at that part.
That's okay. I still say words from a while ago, and Kyle will correct me. I call it tournament. He's like, no, is it championship now? I don't even remember. And I'm not good at the word. I don't know. I still call it tournament. he's correcting
Honestly,
me.
Christine, they don't let me out a lot anymore. They sort of, look, we gave you this title of president and chairman of the board. You do that. Yeah. You're really good at it. We do. We have rehearsals every week. And they're always different. And sometimes we just have game night.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have just sort of get together and hang out. And so there's all those different ways that Jason, our artistic director right now, does a dynamite job of it. And I think the culture that we have at Comedy Sports for what we've done over the pandemic has proven that the culture is strong. And so we're excited for this next chapter of being in this building that obviously has a lot of history for comedy and improv. And we're happy to have our little piece of it and to bring it out to the world. And we think the accessibility back to that, you know, being in a place that people know about and they've been hearing about for years, and now they can all of a sudden come and see us in that space, is a kind of a cool validation for us as well. So we're excited about seeing how it works out.
Oh, that's great. I can't wait to hear about it. That's wonderful. How many people are in the ensemble now in Chicago?
Well, we have
that play like regularly, you know?
Yeah, let's play regularly, right. I mean, we're probably at about 50.
Okay,
been as high as 60 at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, out of that 50, I would probably say 30 are really our active members doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We're still doing, we have a show that we do on Twitch still. So we're doing a virtual show. And
oh, then really?
We're doing, in the first month of the pandemic, when we were trying to figure out what we were going to do, we pivoted pretty quickly and ran our show on Twitch for audiences and got to the point where we were trending in the top 10% of Twitch channels.
What?
For comedy.
That's amazing.
It was really cool. And you know, the thing that we didn't really realize that was going to happen is that we were going to all of a sudden have be borderless. So for years, it was if you wanted to see Dave, you had to go to Chicago and see Dave.
Right,
and
right.
Now you were able to basically say, hey, we're going to be on our television channel, you know, our Twitch channel, and you can go to that and see the show. And so family members and people from all around the world were joining us. And we were able to really, in essence, kind of create a television show of Comedy Sports. Now, I will tell you, when you watch it, it feels different than our Comedy Sports live show.
Oh,
it
absolutely.
Just is,
yeah.
Right. But everybody was performing in their houses, right? So
right.
You're seeing the cat go across your, you know, like,
yeah.
Don't see that in the live show so much. But the audience is still giving suggestions. The audience is still dying for something that's for them and about them, right? So we were still able to really find what was funny about the format to bring it to the masses and let this kind of piece happen. We did a lot of trial and error. We did a lot of practicing to get it done and eventually came up with a product that we were really proud of. even to the point of where it was, we started to build out our new theater, and we said, do you want to be part of our family, and asked for donations, and did a, you know, a crowdsource or a crowdfund kind of thing. You know, people that we never knew became super fans of us and were donating just to, you know, give money so that we could make the product better, because we needed to get a new, we needed to get a better server to run it, all the video and all the aspects of it. And now as we go live, a lot of the elements that we've created in the television performance for the Twitch stuff are now, those broadcast elements are now being brought into the live performance as well. So it was really cool to, you know, none of the time was wasted. It was developing. And I think there's still another chapter of which we have to figure out pulling out of this pandemic of, you know, what have we learned and what's next and how can we continue to do it better?
Wow, that's great. It sounds like, man, it just sounds like you're doing such amazing, wonderful things in Chicago.
I'm just reading off a script here. Let me get to the next page.
Okay. You know, speaking of the virtual stuff, the cat running by, you know, I'm sure you remember seeing a video of some business guy and his kid runs in naked or, you know, swinging a diaper. I'm an art teacher and I taught virtually for a year, and that was hard. And I remember I was teaching a painting thing and I had, you know, my cup of water to rinse my brushes, but my desk is like a drafting desk, so it tilted slightly, and I'm doing my demo and the kids are quiet, and all of a sudden I moved the wrong way and the water cup spilled all over everything on my desk and all over my pants, and I yelled, "Ah!" really loud in the middle of my class.
Nice. That's great.
And I was like, "Oh no, oh no." I like muted, but they already heard me. And I'm like cleaning up puddles of dirty paint water. So, but I love that you're saying, what can we learn from the pandemic and continue to do in the shows? You know, I mean, you're always willing to learn and bring new things in. I think that's great.
Yeah. So, you know, Renee Rock, who is our managing director, and Jason Geis, who is our artistic director, I think they do an incredible sort of 1-2 punch in being able to do that. Renee's done an amazing job at making sure that we're funded. Mm-hmm. Like, there are grants out there, and it takes a whole lot of work to be able to get those grants, not just PPP money where you fill out a form and the bank goes, oh, okay.
Yeah, sure, right. Yeah.
Which was great. I love that. That was a cool gig.
Right, sure.
But we were able to get some grants and to be able to be smart about how we're kind of funding ourselves to be able to stay alive. And I think Jason does a really nice job of taking people's expertise inside our organization. Everybody has something else that they do other than improv and comedy. And Ryan Ford in our group has been doing an amazing job of doing all the technical sort of whiz bang videos and voiceovers and music and all these elements. And so people get to do these passion projects, but they get to do it for something that they believe in. And when you see your culture engaging in that manner, you know, everybody has a fix and a solve, and there's something else that they have to be able to do out there. And so, you know, where, you know, you said, like, you seem like you're doing so many things and trying to do wonderful things. Honestly, I shouldn't say it's me. I think it's our ensemble that's doing that.
Yeah.
And that's where I get excited about being a part of it. I don't get excited about running it. It's not really the key thing for me. But for my kind of excitement about it is watching a group of people, creative people, come together to find a solution for what's going to hit us next in, you know, in our chapter here. What are we going to pull out of the pandemic? What's it going to be like? What's it going to feel like? And how quickly can you adapt? I mean, we saw a lot of organizations disappear and they won't be back. And that wasn't us. And so the only reason why it's not that way is because of the sense of community that comedy sports has. And I think that part of it transcends even past Chicago comedy sports. I think comedy sports in general has always had this really cool sense of community that nobody can really understand, and they can't, you can take shots at it. You can take swings at it all you want, but you know what? You can also admit that you're lost, because we're doing it. We're still bringing comedy to the masses. We're still creating this access point for people that have never seen theater or comedy before, and it's all of a sudden their first thing.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think there's a love of it that we're creating and we're able to do. And that's exciting and special. And I think at the core of what Dick kind of wanted to do in the beginning of this, I feel like that's probably a special thing for him as well.
Yeah.
Because it just, you know, it captures who he is, I think, and the nature of who he is in its purest form.
Yeah, for sure. Tell me about your nickname, Waiting For.
Yeah, so everybody has a nickname. Yeah. We don't actually use them in Chicago as much anymore, but was Waiting For because my last name is Gaudet or Gaudet. Doesn't matter. It's pronounced every different way, and I'm never telling anybody what it is. Oh, man. So, yes, don't tell anybody. I told you, but don't tell anybody.
I won't tell anyone.
Okay, cool. So I was Waiting For Godot, basically was a parody off of that. Mm-hmm. Only for a short time, we had bowling shirts and they said, Waiting For doesn't really fit on a bowling shirt as well. It's not kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And so my nickname became White Bread. And I was like,
that fits, wow. But Waiting For didn't.
Yeah. Then I took over and I went back for Waiting For.
Yes, so you did.
That was since somebody else was in charge. But I have one shirt that says White Bread on it. And then I have another shirt that says MVP that I wear every time we have the awards show because I've never won an award in our comedy sports. Yeah.
So you gave yourself a shirt that says you did.
I walk out for the MVP every time with MVP on my back. I'm like, I don't need a trophy. I've got a shirt that says it, so it takes care of it. I have a lot of trophies that say Best Dave in Comedy Sports, but for somebody as competitive as me and to never have won an award, like an actual award in the thing, drives me crazy. But they keep placating me by saying, here's a lifetime achievement award, Dave. Well, and that's they're great to get, and I appreciate it. But man, would I like to win one year.
So this competitiveness, you said you played hockey. Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, I was a hockey and lacrosse player all growing up and all the way through college and still play competitive hockey now. I go to Canada and play with a group of guys, and my sons play on my team with me, and so it's a pretty. I have a hockey problem. I stopped playing lacrosse because I was a goalie, and it's not as much fun to get the ball when you're 50 years old thrown at your frail body anymore.
Even like playing like board games, like Go Fish, when you were a kid, where you're like, "I'm winning this game, Mom." I mean.
No, I know. I always won, so not really concerned about it.
Okay, all right. Sorry, I didn't know. Listening to the Goldfish champion.
I was just as bad. I'm not a great loser, honestly.
No.
Like, I'm not going to throw the board and flip the board. I'm not that. But I do not like, I don't like, who likes losing? Like, I don't get it.
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, I understand when people say be a good loser. I'm like, yeah, okay. Great. That's me just giving up, I guess, but. No, I want to win every time. And I'm playing comedy sports as anybody that's seen me perform probably too much to win. It can get off the rails a little bit every once in a while.
Well, I think that must be fun, though. Like, it brings a whole different thing to the game for you.
Oh, my favorite is Joe Cortese playing against me, or actually Joe Cortese reffing.
Yeah.
That's as much competitive against me because he and I both kind of we're just two similar beings. And I think we both want to outdo each other. And so if I'm the captain of the team, I don't care. I could actually just be a player. I'm still going to attack Joe. Right. And that's just the competitive nature of it. But now we're playing a game of, all right, well, who can get the audience to win over? And I will also tell you, Joe always wins because he's much nicer than me. So he goes for a nice factor. I don't have the nice factor.
So you're the jerk who has to win. Joe's the guy, so he doesn't.
Yeah, he just gives the audience a nice little caress and a little pet.
He does.
And then the audience loves him. And meanwhile, I'm over there, now I'm here.
Right, you're sweating, damn it.
Yeah, but I won the competition for best.
There you go. See, you did get a trophy.
Right. There's no trophy for that, but that's not my fault.
That's not your fault. We'll make you one. We'll make you one and send it to Chicago.
Christine, it's amazing. You understand me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Look for it in the mail.
Oh, okay. You're gonna wait.
We're gonna play just a couple more games, like a couple quick games here before we sign off here. I'm gonna do a would you rather question to get to know you a little bit. It's pretty gross. So here we go.
All right, great. We used to do this a lot on the travels. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you rather suck pea soup from a biker's beard or lick strained pea drool from a baby's bib?
I'd do the biker one.
You would? Really?
I would. I'm not good with babies, honestly. I have we had three kids in under 3 years. And
oh, wow.
So I have a 23, 24, 25 year old now.
Wow.
And one time my wife left me alone for a weekend. And I was like, I got no problem. I'll be able to handle this.
Right.
My kid came down and he had done a poop explosion. Like, children.
Yeah.
He's covered in it. He's like, Daddy. And I had to, like, I picked him up. I was like, oh no. It's also the weekend that they learned the F word.
I was
like, oh no, oh no. And I put him in the tub and I didn't want to touch anything. So I got scissors and a plastic bag and tongs. And I cut up his sleeve, down his side, cut him out of his pants, out of his socks, tonged it through the tongs, the poopy, everything into the plastic bag, sealed, put the scissors in there, sealed it. And I thought, I did a good job. So I can't imagine the baby drool thing. I don't think I'd be good at that.
So how would you describe yourself to someone who doesn't know you?
I'm very passionate about things that I love. So I'm passionate about watching people grow. I'm passionate about making people laugh. And then I think the biggest thing that I'm passionate about is creating a life where I get to be creative every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the key to what I would say for myself of my success. Like it's once I stop thinking about, is it about fame? Is it about money? Is it about toys and, you know, buying things, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I created a life where I just get to be creative every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's where things change. So I'm passionate about things that I love and I love being creative.
Oh, I love that. That's wonderful.
That was on page 2 of what I was reading. So I'm glad.
That was really good. Save that page.
Oh. That's circle, good. Circle that one.
That's good. And what would you do if you had a magic wand?
You know what I would do is I'd probably go back and start over.
Like from birth?
Yeah, from birth. From birth. So I don't want to have this baby problem anymore. I think that's where it started.
Wow. You just do it all over again.
I think I would go back to when I first came to Chicago. There's things that I wish that I had done differently, things that I wish that I had said differently, situations that I wish that I had treated differently.
Sure.
So there's a great deal of knowledge that comes from doing this for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I know they're not really regrets. They're just learning moments. And if I could wave a wand and go back and start over and do it, I know it would be different. I don't know what would happen. There'd probably be something else that would occur, but
sure. If
it was a one, I'd like to go back and try a couple of things different.
If you didn't get involved in improv, what do you think you'd be doing in your life?
When I graduated college, I had done internships on Wall Street. I had been a police officer on Martha's Vineyard.
What?
I had, okay. Oh yeah. This is a whole nother podcast.
That's another podcast. All right. We'll book that later.
Yeah, for those that have heard the stories, they know. But I had this resume and I'd like been president of the school. So I had this resume that was, what do you want to do kind of thing. And I got this job to sell ball bearings and rocket engines. And for a company called Federal Mogul. And my parents came to graduation and my dad was like, well, when are you starting that job at Federal Mogul? We're really excited about it. And I was like, well, I'm going to go make people laugh for a living in Chicago first. And he was like, oh, Christ. God. Yeah. And my mother was like, you know, that's fine, just as long as you own it. And so I moved to Chicago with a ticket to go back to leave. Like I had my return ticket back then. You could buy, it was paper tickets.
Yeah.
So the back one was return and I kept it for probably 10 years thinking at some point in time, I'm going to have to go back. So I probably would have been a salesman of some sort.
Okay.
Cause those are the jobs that I was getting. But my parents first came out to see me perform, at Comedy Sports in Chicago, and they knew that I'd come out to do the Second City and I've gotten into their repertoire theater that everybody gets into if you pay your money.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, I had to audition, so I thought it was great. And so they came out to see the show, and there were 14 people in the audience.
Oh.
And I remember finishing the show, going backstage, and like, my parents are gonna make me go home. Like, you don't understand what I gave up to do this.
Yeah.
And I went out and I told my parents, I said, hey, yeah, normally the second show has more people. This is weird. There's only 14 people. I'm like, oh, we'll stay for the second show. There's 12 people in that show. We've all been there, right?
Yes, totally.
I'm like, oh, no, not today. Right. The next time they saw me in Comedy Sports, I owned it. So I was running it. I was like, yeah, remember that thing where there were 12, 14 people? Me and Jill, we sort of run it now. And it's really great. They're like, oh, this is awesome.
Well, I'm so glad you are a part of Comedy Sports, and I think we should plan where you come back up and challenge Milwaukee on a surprise singing the Jets, because I'd love to see that. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I would love to do it, and I still have a lot of great friends up there in Milwaukee. I actually do a couple of events up there, so I reach out to them when I get up there, but I haven't gone on the Milwaukee stage in a while and love to do it again.
That would be awesome. We got to plan that. Dave Gaudette, thank you so much for taking time today to talk to me. I hope we get a chance to do a show together someday.
Yeah, so do I, Christine. This was wonderful, and thanks for doing this. I think it's important that we know about all the wonderful people that are part of this community.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I'm enjoying doing it and talking to tons of people about their story. I find it fascinating and fun. Awesome. Thanks for your time, Dave.
All righty. Bye-bye, everybody.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is produced and engineered by Kyle Hannikin. Our announcer is PJ Rodwell. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Send us your favorite Would You Rather question at thecomedysportspodcast@gmail.com. As always, I'm Christine Rolo Capriolo. Catch you next time.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is an independent production made by CSC Players. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast host and any guests are their own and do not represent the views and opinions of any CSE location or CSE worldwide. Vocabulary used by the host and guests is not necessarily representative of the CSE brand.